Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
His drug and alcohol-fueled antics made world headlines and engulfed a city in unprecedented controversy. Toronto Mayor Rob Ford's personal and political troubles have occupied center stage in North America's fourth largest city since news broke that men involved in the drug trade were selling a videotape of Ford appearing to smoke crack cocaine. Reporter Robin Doolittle was one of three journalists to view the video and report on its contents in May 2013. Her dogged pursuit of this story has uncovered disturbing details about the mayor's past and embroiled the Toronto police, city councilors, and ordinary citizens in a debate about the future of the city. She writes about it in her new book, Crazy Town, The Rob Ford Story. The book is published by Viking, and we welcome Robin Doolittle to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
I am curious as to what your impression of the mayor was prior to May 2013.
I've been working on an investigation into Rob Ford's erratic behavior, and I can get into more of that later, but since late 2011. So I had a pretty good idea of what was happening with the mayor long before the crack video came into play.
Meaning that there was some degree of drug use and addiction?
Yeah, so it started in late 2011. I started hearing about domestic incidents at the mayor's home. And eventually, after pursuing that story for a couple months, got a story in the paper about how the mayor's in-laws phoned 911 after they believed that Rob Ford was drunk driving and taking their grandchildren to the airport against his wife's wishes. The next story that kind of came along was the fact that Rob Ford was really not around City Hall. His staff didn't know where he was sometime. He'd disappear for even days on end. He wasn't showing up for meetings. He was missing appointments with dignitaries. And that snowballed into this broader investigation into possible alcohol abuse and substance issues. And then in early 2013, I, along with my colleague Kevin Donovan, wrote a story saying that his staff wanted him to go to rehab, that they thought he had a drinking problem, which was impacting his ability to do his job, and that he'd been removed from a military ball after showing up impaired. It was just a few days after that we got the call about the crack video.
The interesting thing is, in reading the book, that when he won the 2010 municipal election, there's always been controversy around this guy. He had controversy way before he even came into the public eye.
Right. Well, when voters elected Rob Ford in 2010, they knew he wasn't perfect. They knew he'd already been once convicted of drunk driving, that he'd been arrested on a marijuana charge back in 99, that he'd been arrested on a domestic assault charge and uttering death threats against his wife. Those charges were dropped due to inconsistencies in her testimony. And they also knew that he'd had this long track record of saying homophobic or racist or inflammatory things on the floor of council. That said, they also knew him as the guy that they could that would call them back at City Hall. Rob Ford really does call people back, and he made a name for himself by phoning his constituents. So if you phoned and said, there's a big pile of leaves at the end of my street that city staff missed cleaning up, he would get it fixed for you or try to get it fixed for you. And this really made people feel that they had an ally at City Hall. His politics are very simple. It's, we don't need to raise taxes. Government takes enough money from you. And that's obviously very appealing to people as well. So those two things combined is enough for some voters to overlook all of these other distractions.
This book is as much about Toronto as it is about Mayor Rob Ford, because as you argue in the book, this man could very well be reelected in 2014 to continue being mayor of the city. And that says a lot about the town. It says a lot about him, and it says a lot about what you make of the situation. And for one, I don't think there really is another term for the circus that it's become.
Yeah. In the book, when I started writing it, I set out to answer two questions. One, how is it that a guy like Rob Ford gets elected in Toronto? Toronto is a city that most in Canada think of as the epicenter of liberal, left-wing, environmentally friendly artsy, fartsy, hippy-dippy Canadians. And Rob Ford seems the polar opposite of everything that you think of when you think of Toronto. So how is it that happened? And two, why is Rob Ford the way that he is? When I was looking at the first question, it all came back to this period in the mid-1990s when the provincial government of the day, a conservative government, decided that in order to save money, it would join Toronto with a population of about 650,000 with all of the surrounding suburbs. There were five municipalities in and around that area. And this is called amalgamation. And it overnight turned Toronto into a city of 2.4-ish million. And that also meant that this downtown urban area is suddenly vastly outnumbered by people who live in the suburbs. And the priorities are different. If you're in the suburbs, you're obviously going to care more about issues like leaf collection, street cleaning, garbage pickup, whereas if you're downtown, you might be more interested in things like public transit and bike lanes, cultural initiatives. And this really has created a lot of tension between these two parts of the city.
When you think about the patience of the city, certainly in this country, we are no stranger to political scandal. We're no stranger to political scandal in mayor's offices and governor's offices and even the White House. So this is a story that's played out. And what usually happens is that there is an admission and then the pressure becomes so so severe and so overwhelming that the person bows out and says, okay, enough. What is it about Rob Ford that says, okay, I'm going to ride this wave and believe and very well may have the people behind him to be able to do that?
You know, that's discussed so often, and I think it's really interesting. It's hard to explain other than the fact that Rob Ford doesn't care what you think of him. I think a lot of politicians resign not because they are legislatively forced to resign, but because they're embarrassed. They don't want to stand, I mean, I'm referring to American scandals, because which often involve sex scandals. You know, you don't want to be a man having to stand there every day and answer why you've, you know, been having an affair on your wife and why you are launching a campaign about family values when you clearly have some issues on that front, and it's embarrassing. And Rob Ford shows up for work every day, and every day, well, he doesn't show up for work every day, but I should say, but when he does come to work, as soon as he gets off the elevator, there's a couple dozen reporters there screaming, were you drunk driving last night? Do you still smoke drugs? Did you use a prostitute, as police documents have suggested? He just fields these questions and just ignores them. He doesn't care if the so-called elite, although he himself is very wealthy, think he's a buffoon. He's really all about he connects with, as he would say, the average folk, and that's who he cares about. And there's this group of people that support him called Ford Nation that don't care about this other stuff. In fact, they think it's a witch hunt that the media keeps bringing it up.
It has to be distracting, though. I mean, as far as for even just looking at your job as a reporter, there are other things going on in the city, but that becomes the distraction. People aren't shouting out questions about what's happening in the Capitol and what's happening in the governor's office or in the mayor's office. They're asking about what the personal about the personal.
Yeah, Rob Ford, it's important. It's hard to understand this if you're not living in the city, but he's been, our municipal government structure is much different than what Americans might be used to. Rob Ford is just one vote on a council of 45. Unless he has friends, he can't get anything through, and that's been the case since early 2012. The power of the mayor's office is really in its influence. So he has control, well, he used to have control of the people who'd chair the subcommittee or the committees and subcommittees. He'd be able to assign special tasks to certain councillors and give them more profile, appoint the head of the Toronto Transit Commission, put his vote in for who he'd like to be the speaker, pick a budget chief. And by doing this and compromising on certain issues and all of that stuff that happens in governments to get votes, you build a sort of caucus around you. And this is what propelled him to be very successful in his first year, because he had that strong group of right-wing counselors around him. But as he's become more and more of a farce, counselors have moved away, and now they really are sort of working together. There's a centrist group of counselors that has built a coalition with some left-wingers and some right-wingers, and they're really pushing policy through. Rob Ford has had a very marginal job in terms of governing the city for well over a year and a half. The issue now is that it's just, it is this sideshow. He's running for re-election. He hasn't been to work. So far as seen today, he hasn't shown up. He wasn't there yesterday. He called in sick on Friday, it looked like, after he was spotted at a downtown bar. I mean, things are kind of falling apart for him.
And, I mean, not to be overly forgiving or charitable here, but it seems to me that at the bottom of this, you have a man who seems, by all appearances, to have a problem. And right. And that problem isn't being taken care of.
Yeah, and I mean, in the book, I certainly deal with that and chronicle the issues with substance in the family that occurred. This is a long-standing pattern. And one thing that's been nice is people have read the book and said that they have a newfound sympathy for him in some ways. In another light, though, I mean, this guy is not a regular person. He's the leader of the city, and many people are saying he's being selfish. He's sort of holding the city hostage. He's refusing to get help. There's lots of political will for him to keep his job and go to rehab and get better, but he's not. And it's also important to really remember that this isn't just an issue of him drinking too much or possibly using drugs on his own time. There are really serious allegations brought forward by the Toronto Star's investigation, details in my book, and also the police investigation, that this man was hanging out with a violent street gang called the Dixon City Bloods that police allege were smuggling handguns into the city. He has friends that are involved in the criminal underworld. One of his friends was charged with extortion in connection to trying to get the crack video back. He's still hanging out with that person as a few weeks ago, and he doesn't seem to be getting help or trying to change. And when you have your elected officials open to blackmail in this way, that's a real problem. It's not just his personal issues. It's impacting the city.
So if we use the runaway train analogy, it seems as though at some point it's going to derail, and there would have to either be an announcement that he's not running again or that he would have to leave office to seek some sort of treatment.
There is absolutely no way he will not run again. He is running again. The only thing that could prevent him from running is if he passes away. This is his life. He loves being mayor. He wants to be mayor. This is his life's ambition. He wants to actually be prime minister. And while people laugh at that, the guy is the leader of the largest city in Canada. I mean, that's
right.
A really hard job to get. And granted, things are really going off the rails, and it is looking harder and harder for him to get reelected. But all of the issues that existed that got him elected in the first place are still present in this city. And that's what part of the book explains, is this, on one hand, it chronicles this really interesting family, and that's a whole other thing. There's more than Rob Ford. There's
right.
a political dynasty. That
Team Ford.
And how they're successful in this country and what it means going forward for the future of politics.
What about criminal charges, though? I mean, wouldn't criminal charges have an impact?
No, I mean, if he's convicted, for sure, but if he's just charged, he could still run if he was charged. He hasn't been proven guilty. The question is whether he's going to be charged. He keeps kind of saying over and over again, well, I haven't been charged with anything, but he's admitted to smoking crack cocaine and buying illegal drugs while being mayor. So, I mean, to me, it's sort of irrelevant in that sense of, I mean, morally, he's already admitted to being involved in criminal activity. You know, he has a say over the police budget. He's openly at war with the police chief. It's really, he's completely embattled, not to overuse a cliche, but it doesn't seem to matter to him. He's still pressing forward.
Well, the name of the book is Crazy Town, the Rob Ford story. It is published by Viking. Robin Doolittle, thank you very much for spending time with us this morning. I appreciate your reporting and sharing with us.
Thanks for having me.
Great pleasure. Again, the title of the book is Crazy Town, The Rob Ford Story, published by Viking. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.